and help you out. See? And I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3061. Diane?
Thank you. Chair Cruz and members of the committee. House Bill 3061 prohibits health insurance by reimbursement or payment for prescription drugs from limiting insured persons to less than 90-day supply of those prescription drugs. It's my understanding that this bill is a almost identical bill to the last session, which was House Bill 2520. So what I did was I went back into the files and pulled the preliminary measure summary and a final measure summary on those bills so that you might take a look at the discussion that occurred before that bill ended up being gotten stuck with a whole other issue. Oh, every once in a while happens in this building. But I thought that to take a look at that previous bill and the second measure summary might help you understand the issue a little bit before that bill was transformed.
Okay, and colleagues, as I understand, there are amendments and work groups and other things going on at this point in time. We are certainly not ready with a final product, but I think it would be appropriate at this point in time to have the discussion of the bill and the merits, and so I'll call up Representative Knope.
Thank you, the original from your session, and this was when it, after it was amended.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming early.
Good afternoon, Chair Cruz. Thank you for inviting me early. I appreciate that, and I didn't want to hold up the committee. And thank you to the committee for hearing the bill. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3061, as your good committee administrator indicated, grew out of a bill from last session. And I believe House Bill 2520. That bill passed the House 57-0 and then was gutted in the Senate and turned into a pharmacy card plan that had nothing to do with the original bill. The original bill was brought by Representative Montgomery, now lobbyist Bob Montgomery, and he put it in for his wife, Deanna Montgomery. And the situation that they're involved with was that she was having trouble getting a long enough supply of her thyroid medicine. That's essentially a maintenance medicine that she was on basically for life. And she was having the 30-day supplies of that particular medicine and ended up having to go on vacation shortly before she ran out, and it created a problem for her. So one of the things that we want to do and to accomplish with the bill is to allow people to have maintenance drugs for a longer period of time. These are drugs that they're going to be on for more than a couple of weeks, you know, several months, if not years. And the other thing we were trying to accomplish was to cut down on the amount of copays that were necessary for that. So, in effect, lowering the cost to the consumer of the prescription drugs and making the drugs more accessible. And so I put in a bill and got many co-sponsors on that bill, and thank the co-sponsors. And then I met with a group of insurance plans that were had some concerns about the previous bill. And we've come up with a dash one amendment, which I believe the committee will have shortly. You got it. Great. And I think this answers many of their concerns and gets kind of to the heart of what we're trying to do, and I think will not increase the cost to the health plan providers in a significant way. I think it will limit any cost increases due to the making the prescription drugs more available. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions about the bill and have others come up and testify as to the amendments and what they're trying to accomplish with the amendments.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Representative Knope, why did the bill fail last time?
As I say, Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, it didn't fail in the House. It passed the House 57-0 and three excused, but it became a vehicle for something that the Senate apparently wanted, and so it was gotten stuffed. I think you saw that process the other day in stream restoration, where a bill changes kind of on a dime, so to speak, it becomes a new bill. And I think most House members just assumed that this bill was going to come out the same way. And I think in the crush of what happened last session, toward the end, this bill became a different bill. And this particular idea died along the roadside. And I think part of it was because there were still some concerns among some of the insurers about the cost. And as I got into this bill and talking with the insurance companies, I realized that if we didn't do it properly, we could end up denying access to people and increasing the cost. And that was the exact opposite effect that we wanted to have. And I think the amendments to this bill will help in that considerably. And I think you can have those folks come testify on the bill, but I think they are much more satisfied and possibly even neutral on this bill as to last time. They definitely opposed the bill, and likely it was killed over in the Senate and turned into a different bill, probably because there were still concerns about the increase in potential costs that we just didn't get to last session.
Thank you.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Chair. Isn't it true with mail orders that, and maybe you said this while I was out there, that you can get a 3-month supply through the mail?
Chair Cruz and Representative Mona Sanderson, that is true. And this will apply to maintenance drugs. And some of the health plans have their own pharmacies, so to speak, and they do use a lot of mail order. And one of their concerns was, and they can express it better than I, but that they not be sort of prohibited from continuing to use their mail program and have to lose discounts that they otherwise might not receive going through a pharmacy. But it was, I think they could probably do a better job of explaining, you know, the nuances of what they're trying to do with their the amendment that we had crafted to help satisfy them.
To the questions. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
I was told they wanted to come up as a group, so group, come on up.
Uh-oh. Here, as long as there's not more of them than there are of us.
Well, life's tough, you know. There may be more of them, but they can't vote.
Bring another chair.
Representative Morissette.
Painfully, we know that.
John, I was in the other committee last time when we heard this bill, and I remember when you came up to testify in opposition to it. And you, did you remember that?
I do. I can't remember the line, but I remember feeling very uncomfortable and doing something to relieve my discomfort. Yeah.
Because the bill addressed the concern of a prominent representative's wife.
Yes.
You felt very I remember that well.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, that was Dave Fiskum. No.
We wish you a Merry Christmas or what?
They looked at me, and I guess since I'm in the middle, I get to go first. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peggy Annett, and I'm representing the Health Insurance Association of America. And as you learned, this is an issue that we have seen before. I just received the amendments and haven't looked at them closely. I think that I still have some concerns about the way the language is written. But just to give the members of the committee that were not here to hear this issue before, part of the issue came up in terms of this individual not being able to get the prescription related to a vacation situation. And in discussions with the individual, what we learned was this person was unaware of the vacation benefit, that all that one needs to do is to call the plan to get an extension of their prescription drug coverage for those kinds of circumstances. And in fact, I used the example last time that I have had an occasion to take a river trip where you have to have two prescriptions in case you flip in the river and lose one and have to have a backup. Generally, plans have those kinds special allowances in case you need extra prescriptions for a vacation or a particular sort of situation like I was getting into in terms of going down the Colorado River. So one element of the bill that has been raised dealt with the vacation question. The other issue is somewhat more problematic, and that relates to being sure that there is a process in place dealing with maintenance drugs so that a person doesn't have multiple prescriptions that are counterindicated and perhaps change prescriptions midstream. That was one of the issues that we got into in discussions last session about being careful about how such a program might be crafted, and that what can happen is somebody thinks that they have a maintenance drug that is going to work, and then within 20 days, 30 days, it turns out it is not the right prescription drug. Therefore, they go back, you've got the wasted prescription, and they're getting another 90-day prescription, which may well still be in a trial period. Those are the kinds of issues that I think that we will continue to look at when we take a look at the amendments as they have been proposed.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Dave Fiskum, representing Pacific Air as well as Providence. We appreciate the prime sponsor's motivations in proposing this bill, at least in his discussion with me and others. Understood his interests, or Representative Knope's interests, dealt with, as he has described, better than I will do, probably, issues of convenience and cost. In my discussions with him over the weeks, my clients have expressed concern that perhaps the printed version of the bill could have the reverse effects on both counts, unintended, as those consequences would be if they actually existed. We've worked on language. I probably have in front of me here four or five versions of language all marked up, and I've seen the amendments today that stemmed at least in part from some language we gave Representative Knope yesterday. I think the amendments, I would characterize them from our vantage point at least as being close. I have some concerns about the language in the third line of the Dash 1 amendments that talk about shall provide maintenance drugs in quantities sufficient for up to 90 days. We had other language that wasn't quite that, and in those words, perhaps that's a council issue as opposed to Representative Knope's issue. I guess the point is that I think we're still working on words. These words are close. We appreciate the representative's interest in at least listening to our concerns about that. We essentially would favor an approach that requires us to have a program for dispensing up to a 90-day supply without a requirement to do so, in all cases for the reasons that Ms. Annett has described, and then maintenance medications, and there may in fact be a need to place a requirement on health insurers to adopt policies and procedures relative to what maintenance medications actually are, for the definition of maintenance medication even could change. We have some concerns as well about the 90-day issue and on a required basis, because in some cases, and I have a letter I could provide for the record at some point dealing with perhaps their vignettes about what would happen in terms of quantities for supplies of contraceptive drugs that we have that require us to open up packages and put different quantities in certain new packages relative to 90 days as opposed to the normal 28 or 30-day period. Issues like that, that this language could have an effect on, unintended again, I think, by the sponsor. I guess the bottom line for me is that we would appreciate the ability to continue working on this language with this committee as well as with Representative Knope, with an eye toward adopting something that might be close to what he's presented to you today in the Dash 1s, and I think it's been our concerns, at least to the extent that we have them, will be addressed.
Committee, just for your knowledge, we just found out Representative Walker is okay, and she is on her way home where her husband, the physician, can take her with tender loving care for her. So.
Okay.
That was more important than my comments, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
thank you.
Chairman, John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Mr. Chairman, I won't repeat the testimony of the previous two witnesses, but I would only add that there is, with the cost of today's pharmaceuticals, a very large cost element to the 90-day prescription issue. If in the cases we might think about in our own personal lives of getting a 90-day prescription that we're going to be on or have been on for a long time and truly a maintenance drug, that is one thing. And as lay people who are not involved in day-to-day administration of pharmaceuticals, it's easy for us to lose track of the fact that, particularly in the current marketplace, people are changing drug plans or health plans with some regularity at their place of work, both in terms of going from one carrier in a menu approach or their employer changes health plans. There is an issue with that in terms of who's actually providing the benefit for a quarter and not receiving premium for that. But bigger than that is the issue of the potential waste and the amount of money that if you do change prescriptions, how much money is wasted in terms of a bunch of pharmaceuticals that it's basically flushed down the toilet. So my file, which is in my office, I was going to pick up at the dinner break, has in it some examples that I could give to the committee in terms of the costs and what in relationship to those issues. So with that, I would be glad to work with the sponsor of the amendments and try to craft something that would make it very clear to people what their benefits are, and as Fiscom said, maybe define what is a maintenance drug as well.
John, if you want to get those examples to Diane, she needs to do them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Mike Dewey, ODS Health Plans. This is the first time I've had the opportunity to see the Dash 1s, but working with Mr. Fiscom, I think he's at Dash 15. We meet periodically to look at all the bills, and Dave and others come back with recommendations for modifying this particular piece of legislation. So we are serious about trying to find some language that works. The reason we are at these Dash 1 is we find the kind of unintended consequences that occur, and as Mr. Powell and others have said, with regard to pharmaceuticals and the cost going up, in some cases I can't imagine somebody affording a 90-day supply just because of the cost. But nonetheless, we understand the convenience part of this, and for the maintenance drugs, and clearly maintenance drugs are going to be used for a periodic period of time, it makes sense. But you might even go into your own bathroom from time to time and see how many of your prescriptions, you know, are still out there. And it says do not take after a period of time. And I know with our kids and so forth, we've had a lot of prescriptions that we haven't used fully, other than for amoxicillin. I always ask for a little bit more just in case for the next earache for my kids. But nonetheless, we would like to work with the sponsor. We understand the concerns. It's just we haven't gotten there yet, but we would like to try and get there. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Any questions for this group? Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions, actually. One is dealing with trial periods, and you know, in the bill, the way I'm reading, or in the amendments, I should say, the way that I'm reading it, is that it's talking about maintenance prescription drugs, and then in sub 2 of section 2, it talks about the insurer kind of coming up with their own policy describing what maintenance drugs are going to be. But when we're looking at trial periods, wouldn't you agree that, and I don't care, any one of you can answer this, but wouldn't you agree that usually a provider, when they're trying a patient on a new drug, that they'll actually, as opposed to, they'll actually prescribe what they want as far as dispensed. For example, if you're trying a patient for the first time on Lipitor, which is a cholesterol controlling medication, the provider might say, you know, dispense 20. As opposed to dispensing, you know, 90 days or, you know, whatever. I don't know what the dosages are on that particular drug. But my point is that dispensing it so that there's only a couple of weeks there, that the patient would be on. The other thing is with regards to like thyroid medications, usually those are for a year at a time. But I'm just curious, your thoughts on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, since I'm the one that raised the issue, I'll respond. I happen to be a case example of how the trial period didn't work out and had to, in fact, went through a couple. And I had assumed that it would work appropriately, and it didn't. And within the last 2 months, I've actually thrown away an extended period of maintenance drugs. But aside from that specific example, in general, I agree with you that you should go through that trial period. But if you take a look at way the language is written in Section 2, that's not really what it says. It says that we'll provide payment or reimbursement in quantities for up to 90 days when prescribed for an enrollee. So in essence, once you have the prescription as written, it says that you can get up to a 90-day prescription. So when we're talking about the need to clarify the language and perhaps tinker with it, we need to be clear that there's that sort of a relationship that when the provider gives a prescription for something that's deemed a maintenance drug, that does not automatically mean 90 days in the event that the physician wants the person to have a limited time to find out whether or not it will actually work for that person.
But that's what I'm pointing out is that usually a provider is going to limit by their prescription, because when they put on their DISP colon and a number, they expect it to be followed by the pharmacy. They don't expect the pharmacy to decide, well, yeah, what the hell, I'll go ahead and, I know it says dispense 20, but yeah, what the hell, I'll go ahead and give them 40. They're not going to do that.
Representative Cruz, Representative Crummell, I'm merely suggesting that language can be clearer as provided in Section 2.
Okay. My other question is with regards to what is a maintenance drug? And I think, again, referring to sub 2 under Section 2 and the amendment, I think it's pretty clear that it gives that authority to the insurance company to say, or insurer, I guess would be the right word to say, to determine what a maintenance drug is. So if you wanted to determine that blood pressure medication, cholesterol medications, thyroid medications, that sort of thing were maintenance drugs, then you could, I think it'd be a pretty tough sell for anybody to make the case that, you know, like an antibiotic, for example, is a maintenance drug. I don't think so. Painkillers don't tend to be, unless you've got a person that's got intractable pain, painkillers don't tend to be maintenance drugs. What tend to be maintenance drugs are, you know, the ones that I just mentioned with regards to blood pressure and cholesterol and Dilantin seizure disorders and that sort of thing. So would there be a problem with the insurance companies having the authority to sort of make their own rules as far as what they deem being maintenance drugs?
Mr. Chairman, John Powell, Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, no, in fact, that's the reason that those words are in there, is the belief that there needs to be some definition. It would likely be a fairly common definition across insurers, but again, definitely for that purpose, to try to refine a list of drugs that would truly be for a maintenance situation. Again, it is, I think, important to realize that in a whole series of drugs, I know going through the illnesses of both of my parents, there were drugs that were thought that they would be on the rest of their lives that they ended up having to come off from due to interaction with other drugs and some changes in their health, and in fact ended up with excess bottles, in fact almost impossible to keep track of, even with a full-time caregiver in the home. It became extremely difficult to keep track of these medications terms of their uses and all of that. So it became a very difficult problem. And then as different physicians started taking certain ones away, it even became more of a problem. But there was quite a bit of waste, even though we weren't getting 90-day supplies of those drugs.
If I'm hearing, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and part of this is trying to weigh the convenience versus the cost, and clearly there will be some additional cost. I don't think you can question that. So we're just trying to figure out a way that we allow the insurance companies to develop rules so that there are some exceptions for the, you think it's going to be a maintenance drug, and so you try it out for 30 days or whatever, and then you put them on. Mr. Powell is correct. A concern is one that we need to touch upon a little bit is the changing of health plans. Employers are shopping around. Increases have been pretty significant, and so then you're in between getting premiums and so forth, and believe me, you want to get a premium for those prescription drugs because they are a large part of the premium now. And those are concerns that we have, and I don't know how you fix those, but we just need to make sure we're not in a situation that we just continue to add a little bit more to that premium dollar, recognize that we're trying to still deal with the convenience factor.
Representative Gerard, I was just curious. It seems to me that the definition of a maintenance drug pretty much is determined from individual to individual by the duration of time they're taking the drug. What might be a maintenance drug for one person wouldn't be for another. What really determines it is simply how long you've been on it, and not projected on how long you're going to stay on it, but but how long you've been on it. Am I going down a wrong trail here, or?
Mr. Chairman,
John, and
Representative Gerard. I think there would be circumstances where what would be a maintenance drug to one person would not be to another. I think that's right. You also have situations in today's pharmaceutical world where new drugs are coming out on the market very quickly. And so if you are on a drug for, let's say, a psychiatric prescription.
I won't take that.
Yeah, there are new drugs coming to the market every day, even by the same manufacturer, that are improved from at least their vantage point in terms of the good they do to someone. So even a drug that you may think you're going to be on the rest of your life, you may not be on that particular prescription. You may be on a drug that does the same thing, but it may be, quote, a better drug. And so there are even situations like that where it's clearly you're going to use it for a long time, and maybe for the benefit of society you should be on it, but there may be another one that comes along that's even better for that particular purpose.
Mm-hmm. But we are talking about a 90-day span here, I mean, basically.
And Mr. Chairman, again, for drugs that cost, say, and the ones I was just describing are over $100 a month.
Gotcha.
Even though an excess of $200 per prescription doesn't sound like a lot, in today's world, with the number of people taking prescriptions for a lot of reasons, it ends up being a lot of money. And to toy with that period of time ends up being there are millions of dollars there. And to us in our individual world, it's $100 and it's a lot, but as a society, it's millions of dollars that we're dealing with in these monthly increments, and not just a few thousand here, a few thousand there.
Mr. Chair, just to bring back this cost point, I was talking to somebody that is associated with a large group plan in the state, and under their current benefit designs now, they're looking at a $60 million shortfall for next year, and they're trying to deal with the premium increases versus the benefit designs they have, and so they're very much concerned about, you know, any kind of new cost over and above what the benefit design is that they presently have. And their choices, of course, as you've heard before, are either increasing the premium contributions on the part of the plan participants or changing the benefit design.
Your turn. Any other questions for this group?
I have one, Mr. Chairman. If Representative Morissette remembers the line I used, I'd like to know it, because I've been sitting here trying to remember that, and I can't quite remember it.
It was, thank you. It was a series of avoidance statements.
Okay.
A whole bunch of them.
Okay.
And a lot of body language. Bruce Bishop. Join the rest of them. But...
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Director, I'm Bruce Bishop, representing Kaiser Permanente.
Good judgment.
And I appreciate the opportunity to distinguish Kaiser Permanente from other health carriers on this issue. As a closed panel health maintenance organization, Kaiser Permanente has no objections to the proposed amendments in this bill. And for any of you who are Kaiser Permanente members or are interested in becoming Kaiser Permanente members, if your physician or other health care provider writes a prescription, that will be covered. That's the way Kaiser Permanente works. Whether it's for 90 days or 180 days, if the prescriber writes it, it's a covered benefit. So from that perspective, we have no objection to the measure as it's proposed to be amended. I would point out technically for the committee that, as other witnesses have indicated, you may want to look specifically at the words in the amendments to make sure that they're accomplishing the purpose that you intend. In fact, I believe all health plans cover prescription drugs, particularly for inpatient services. So if a patient is hospitalized, inpatient drugs would be covered. And the way this is written, that would mean, in effect, that these requirements would apply to every health plan. If the purpose of this amendment is to only apply the requirement for maintenance drug coverage to plans that have outpatient prescription drug coverage, you may want to specify outpatient prescription drug coverage as opposed to inpatient prescription drug coverage. Secondly, in line 4, it says quantity sufficient for up to 90 days. The way I read that language, that also means one day. And if that's what you intend, I would argue that this bill actually accomplishes nothing. So what you mean by up to 90 days should probably be clarified. Thank you very much. I'd be pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Given the rousing sales pitch that you made a moment ago, I'm wondering when Kaiser Permanente plans to open in Eugene.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, to my knowledge, there are no current plans to open in Eugene, although within my memory, there have been serious investigations of that possibility over the last 15 years.
We have a wonderful facility in Salem. You can come
Thank you.
I would strongly suggest the Gateway area in Springfield.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morris, I'll be glad to take that message back.
Hey, wait a minute. We don't need to. He already did. Thanks, Bruce. Tom Holt.
Chair Cruz and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Holt. I'm with the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. We're glad to be back as a supporter of this bill, as we were supporters of the similar bill in the last session. I'd just like to touch on a couple of points of why we think this is a good idea. One, we heard a lot in the previous testimony about why 90 days is so problematic. I would point out that most health plans offer a 90-day prescription benefit as long as a person goes to mail order. Now, mail order is entirely appropriate when people choose for it to be so, but when they are forced to go that direction because of large discriminatory copays, what it leads to is a breakup of the prescription record, which leads to medication error, which leads to hospitalization and higher costs. There have been a number of studies that document that. But also, as we look too at beyond the issue of equity between the ability to go to a pharmacist of one's choice in the community or to choose mail order if that's what one wants to do, when we're looking at the kind of volumes that pharmacies face now and look at this really quite old-fashioned notion of getting long-term medications 30 days at a time, it would be rather like pulling into the gas station and being told, well, you can have 2 gallons. 30 days for someone who's on a medication for a period of years is not a long time. For us in the pharmacy community, though, being able to increase that supply means that someone who does not require a great deal of counseling about a medication that they're on, they've been on, going to be on for a long time, means two fewer visits to the pharmacy, that much less workload on the pharmacy. And if we can work out means through language in this bill to make that an equitable process, that would carry us a long way toward mitigating the problems we face in the pharmacy profession in dealing with the shortage of pharmacists. There are other good reasons, as Representative Knope covered, in terms of convenience to the patient and to people in rural areas in particular who have to travel great distances. It certainly would be a help to them. When you're out in, some of you know, when you're out in the Central Oregon area, there are not a large number of pharmacies, and people will drive 30, 40 miles to get to a pharmacy. And being able to make that trip once every 90 days versus once every 30 days is a benefit to them. With that, I wanted to touch again on this issue of waste and so on. I think Representative Crummell summarized that very well. The intent here is to allow, when appropriate, a practitioner to prescribe up to 90 days and the patient to get that. If someone is trying a new drug, there's nothing here that prevents a shorter duration, and I can assure you that a pharmacist is not going to provide more medication than what is prescribed. That would not be following the instructions of the prescription. And as to the issue of changeover in plans from year to year, well, that also happens in mail order. So I think what we need to do in these discussions, which I think are encouraging in the sense that we seem to be coming closer to agreement than we did last session, we need to focus on the ability of a patient to choose where they're going to get their drugs, having a unified record, and the ability of practitioners to decide when that's appropriate or not appropriate for someone to have a large supply, and not on, really frankly, what I think is a red herring of whether it's 90 days or not. That'll conclude my testimony.
Questions? Thank you, Tom. My hope is that all parties can continue to work, and I'm hoping we can see an amendment that is satisfactory within a week. So, should be doable, one would say. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3061. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3267. And colleagues, for those who remember last November, this was ballot measure 4, basically. We have amendments coming. This is more tobacco settlement stuff. You know, we spent half this session figuring out ways to spend tobacco settlement. This may be one of the best. And ultimately, the amendments I have crafted as, or I have asked for at this point in time, would narrow this down to using tobacco settlement for two purposes, one for a trust fund, and the other would be to use tobacco settlement for chip match, so we can fully access chip. I think two of the more important things we could do with tobacco money are to set up a trust fund and also and also to make sure that we can provide health insurance for the kids that are uninsured in the state. Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if the amendment that you're talking about would have similar restrictions on accessing the trust fund as the bill does, or if you anticipate that those methods for accessing the trust funds would be different.
No, it's going to be similar restrictions, but keep in mind that any restrictions we put in are problematic because the legislature could take them away. We're going into this, as far as the trust fund's concerned, figuring that the money we have now is, the large part of it is going to be spent. Now, the governor in his budget did allocate $100 million to a trust fund, in theory. Whether that happens or not is problematic, but where I am wanting to go and attempting to go is the monies received from the tobacco settlement at a point in time will go into a trust fund. Then it becomes the purview of probably the 2003 legislature as to what to do with that. Hopefully they leave it alone, but I probably won't be here, so that'll be your job. But it seemed to me problematic, seeing how there is such a huge call on this money. But at the same token, I think it's appropriate that we don't spend it all now. We save some for some future program funding, and so that's the intent. I will point out that the amendments leave the amount and the date blank, so that Ways and Means can deal with what they spend and what they want to allocate to the fund. So I didn't necessarily want to try to make that funding decision here.
Mr. Chair, yes. Do you have amendments for that?
No, we don't. That's why we're not moving it today.
Oh, okay.
They aren't back yet. So
okay.
I'm just kind of describing where the amendments are going to go.
Okay.
So Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to note, to avoid misunderstanding, that I have agreed to sponsor this bill because I thought that it was useful and important for us to segregate tobacco funds and treat them in the manner that was contemplated as a part of the tobacco settlement. That, in other words, that they be spent on health care needs and things of that sort that are related to it, and of course cessation. Smoking cessation and also smoking prevention as a part of that. I have to tell you, I have a problem with the idea of segregating funds in a trust account, which under the procedures outlined in the bill, Section 2, are more restricted than other general funds in terms of the legislature's action on them. Now, I recognize that the legislature could, of course, change this law any time and mm-hmm. make it easier to use those funds, but I would think it'd be, from my point of view, it'd be useful to have the fund designated as a separate fund, but also make it clear that the legislature is free to spend the money on the things that are designated at any time. And I think part of the reason why I believe that is the dire financial straits we're in as a state don't really allow us to put aside a lot of money right now, and I wish that were not true. I would love to put aside a bunch of this money for the future, but I think that people in their wisdom defeated Measure 4, at least in part, because they recognized how broke we are, too.
Okay. We can have this discussion when the amendments get here. I guess I would say that there is... While it would be easy for the next legislature to redirect potentially where the earnings from the fund are used, if indeed we are going to set up a trust fund, keep in mind that the tobacco settlement is not a forever pot of money that's going to continue forever. We know that. But so if we're going to do any long-term funding of anything, we have to put in some sideboards to protect the integrity of the fund. And so if it's a simple majority that allows that fund to be raided, it's too damn easy to do. The two-thirds means it's got to be, you know, if the legislature had a really compelling reason, they could go there. But it's not gonna, it would not be an arbitrary decision at that point. So that's kind of the thought behind that.
Yeah.
Representative Tomei.
Mr. Chair, I haven't read this thoroughly, but I'm assuming the bill would place all of the monies into this trust fund. Is that true? All of the monies that come from the tobacco settlement?
No. What the amendment will do, it will have blanks where what the amendment is going to do is leave that decision to Ways and Means as to how much money and money from what point in time. You know, we are assuming right now that by the end of the biennium we will have received somewhere in the neighborhood of $326 million,
right?
Something like that. So 110 has been spent on K-12. I mean, it's been kind of doled out here and there. There's 99 in the ending balance. There's 100 that the governor set aside for a trust fund, which could be this.
Okay.
Now, whether the co-chairs decide that that's the amount of money they want to do is another issue.
So if I may follow up then, your point is to put this in statute so that two-thirds of the legislature would have to vote to take this out.
To take the principal out.
Right.
The interest is...
To be used.
Yes.
An issue that are, you know, delineated right here. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, Representative Barnhart?
Well, if I understood the chair correctly, and I think I did, but I'm not certain. That's why I'm asking the question. It sounds as though it's your opinion that the legislature later on could change the rules under which the trust fund was administered if it chose to do so.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
The only way you could prevent any future legislature from messing with things is to put it in the Constitution. If it's not in the Constitution, they can do anything they want. They could, well, and we do on a regular basis.
Sure.
So we were just trying to put a little bit of a sideboard on this to make it maybe a little more difficult.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you. Now, I asked you this question earlier, and I think we talked about it somewhat today. This afternoon, the amendment would allow Ways and Means to fund some of the bills that we have sent to Ways and Means concerning use of tobacco money. That's
yes.
What the amendment would allow.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Just wanted to be sure.
Any other questions? Close public hearing on 3267 and adjourned.
Thank you.